right, guys, welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with
Sean McCool, and we got a special guest in the studio, kind of in the studio, I guess, Zoom studio, StreamYard studio, whatever we're using this week. Tim David is in the house.
There we go. Tim David.
Hey, welcome. I love that.
Now, that is not to be confused with our last guest last week, who was Tim Davis.
Isn't that crazy?
Really?
That's kind of wild. Yeah, that's kind of wild. So
you gotta have David Tim next week.
Yeah, that'll throw us.
We're looking for a Tim David, or a Tim Davies, or you know, we're going down the list.
So. They're out there. It's funny too. I have a Google alert set up for my name, and come to find out, I am not even close to the most famous Tim David that's out there. Like I can't even own that category.
Who'd have thought? All right. So yeah, we're gonna be talking about Tim's book. Flip. Four Levels Influencing People. That seems like an appropriate title for our show. So I guess you're in the right place, Tim.
Yeah, I couldn't say yes fast enough to Persuasion by the Pint. Man, like two of my favorite things ever.
There you go.
And so, just to tease people, yeah. I got to mention, Tim is an ex-professional magician. That's going to be interesting.
That is correct.
Does that mean you were fired from the industry or like, what does that mean exactly?
moved on a little bit. I had kids. That's what happened.
That's what happened.
No longer able to spend 350 days on the road, doing 350 dates a year.
Crazy. So we could say that one type of magic took you out of another type of magic.
There you go.
You could.
You can use that whenever you want. So.
Wait, where's our drum roll?
So before we get into the book itself, we got some beverages to talk about. And Tim, we always let our guest go first. And you've already had your first sip.
I have a dragon's milk here, which apparently is not a new beverage on the show, but I grabbed it out of the cooler. It looked interesting, looked cold. It's 11%.
Nice.
So I'm prepared for that. And it's a bourbon barrel aged stout.
Very nice. Yeah.
Guess your wife will be driving on the date here in shortly as you guys leave.
Depends how fast I can make this disappear.
Yeah, exactly. You got to metabolize. You can metabolize fast. You're okay. That's fine. Jonathan, what do you have today?
All right. So I'm giving a shout out to my sister-in-law's boyfriend. We had a family get together about 2 weeks ago during the 4th of July. He gave me a Yeehaw, and we've had Yeehaw on before, but this is a Dunkel. So I've never had a Yeehaw Dunkel before until 4th of July weekend. So I already know what this tastes like. And I actually gave him, I told him, he's like, all right, go ahead and give me your rating right now. So I had a sip of it. I got to give that, I think I gave a 2.5, like a 2.5, but yeah. I think that was a little bit of snobbery coming out on my part. So I'm going to re-rate this as soon as I have a sip.
Okay. All right. Well, I've got, and you'll have to score yours, Tim, on a scale of 1 to 5 pints. So be ready for that. All right. So I've got, out here in Texas, we have FM. So the roads are all like FM something, right? So it's farm to market road or farm road. So if you've ever been out of Texas, that's what you'll see in the signs everywhere. So I've got a Farm Road Texas Beer Company and it's a Pecos Amber Lager. I swear I cannot get used to the StreamYard
Pecos
camera.
Amber.
Yeah, so a Pecos.
That's a Texas cool can. Beer. I love the state logo and all. You know, that's
yeah. And then so this one is smooth malt flavor with floral hops and a clean lager finish, like a fine West Texas sunset. This beer embodies the spirit and boldness of Texas. Cheers, Texas. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.
And it is, let's see, 5.6 alcohol. It was a 2018 gold American style amber lager winner. So there you go. So we'll see if it lives up to the hype here.
All right. Picture on the front is my experience every time I go to Texas, just that long open road driving for hours and hours. You know, we drive 45 minutes, so we've gone through two states. It's crazy up here in New England.
So I'm in Austin, so it's literally like 6 hours in any direction to get out of Texas.
Right.
So you're a Sox fan, Tim?
Yes. Red Sox fan.
All right. I won't cheer
and
them back.
And a Cubs fan. So I have, that's my National League team. Whoa, so
okay. The Cubs and Sox.
Oof, I know, everybody's favorite. Everybody's favorite.
You're talking to a couple Braves boys here. So
Okay.
We only have one team in all of the South. So
right, that's right.
Right.
All right. We're not going to go because Florida doesn't count. So
that's right. Yeah.
That's true.
Marlins, they don't.
Well, cheers.
Cheers, guys. Indeed. All right. Okay, Tim, we'll let you go first on a scale of 1 to 5 pints. Five being best.
I'll go like a 3.9 on this.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's got a it tastes very good. There's a lot of flavor hitting me all at once here, mm-hmm. and I can't really even notice the fact that it's 11%. Yeah. So that may be a little dangerous, but makes for a better show, I guess.
Yeah, you'll know it soon enough.
So do you stand there at your bar or are you sitting? Because it's hard to tell.
I go back and forth. I'm standing now. Yeah. I'll go back and forth. I have stools but I like the standing desk sort of.
Yeah.
I've got one of those motorized desks. So right now I'm sitting, but I can raise it and lower it. And, so you'll be fine. If you're drinking 11%, you're already standing. So you won't get that like standing up effect when you're done. So you'll be fine. Jonathan, what do you rate are you changing your rating or are you sticking with the 2.9?
No, I'm going to give it a higher because I realized that I was just being a real jerk before. So I'm going to give it a 2. I'm probably going to give this like a 2.9 because it's really good.
What did you say before?
I said a 2.5. So 2.9 is pretty significant. And look at that. I mean,
that's a pretty dark dunkel.
Yeah. See, I was discriminating before because I was drinking straight out of the can. I didn't realize how dark it was.
You needed a full experience.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So. Okay. I got it. All right. So mine's Amber Ale. Not one of my favorites, but you know, it is 105 all week here in Austin this week. So going a little bit lighter on the beer selection this week.
That's my other experience of Texas.
Yeah. Very hot.
Double digits. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We're in that time of the year here for sure. But I'm going to give this, this just wowed me over. It's pretty average, like amber ale. So I'm going to give it like my gold standard for, I guess that's a brown ale. Newcastle's brown ale, right?
Yep.
Not amber.
Yep.
Yeah. So to me, that's like of the colored ales, I like Newcastle the best. Mm-hmm. This has got a little bit more, definitely a little more hops to it than what I like.
Right.
So I'm going to give it a 3.
Hmm. Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's, you know, out of 5, so it's not quite the middle. It's drinkable. I think this is one, if you're not used to this style of beer, like if you're used to this style of beer, it's probably fine.
Yeah.
But if you're not, it takes one or two to, you know, remind the palate that this is the kind of beer we're drinking today. Yeah. So.
Very cool. Well, we're going to jump right in because I know, Tim, you've got a date going on a little here in a little bit where you get an opportunity to venture out with the wife and leave the kids at home. And, you know, you get that opportunity, you got to take it. So,
First time since March. And here we are in the middle of July here as we record this. Yeah. So it's much overdue and much needed.
Yeah, here comes baby 4.
No. No, we just got a puppy. That is enough.
That's enough.
That is plenty.
All right. So Tim, we'll just jump right in. The name of your book is, do you want to do an intro, Jonathan? I'm terrible at the bio things. And
yeah, I've got, so just to give our audience a little background, Tim's the author. Yeah. He's got a few books out there. One is the Magic Words, the science and secrets behind 7 words that motivate, engage, and influence. That sounds like a really interesting title. Tim, I stumbled across Flip and I got into reading that and I'm like, I didn't even know about the other book that you had out. I guess that was a previous book, Magic Words. And but as I mentioned before, you're an ex-professional magician that now teaches leaders and sales professionals the magic of words at work and in life. So interesting, because I find there's a number of sections, and we'll go through your book here quickly. I took some notes, but we'll go into talking about words and how they influence and how you use those in your everyday conversations and communications with other people. So thanks for coming on and sharing a little bit about your background.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on. You mentioned the previous book, Magic Words, and. Yeah. Being a magician, it was really interesting to me to notice the tiny differences that I would that I would make, right, the tiny changes that I would make to my script, mm-hmm, night in and night out. And like I said, I had sort of this laboratory, if you would, of a live entertainment experience. You know, I know that's not going on right now during the pandemic. There's not a whole lot of big gatherings. Right. But, you know, during my 8, 9 years as a professional magician, I got to do this night after night after night and see how these tiny changes made big differences in the reactions of the audience.
Right.
And very often I would change like the in-between words, like, mm-hmm, not even the main words. I would change a because, I would change a but, I would change an if. And I was just, you know, again, blown away by the impact that had. So then I, you know, of course, began doing a ton of research and, you know, began speaking on the topic and hearing people's stories. And it just sort of ballooned from there until Penguin Random House said, hey, let's do a book.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool. So what's one of the examples you could give, maybe that you remember, that you were like just totally surprised when you changed? Like, give us a sentence or a part of your... I'm sure if you did it for 8 years, you've got your whole script memorized.
Yeah, right. Well, right. I mean, but it's also going on. Oh my gosh, it's been a few years since. Yeah. But you know, the one that jumps out is how I used the word but. Mm-hmm. And you know, I would hand out an envelope to somebody in the audience to hold on to, and that would be the finale of the show. We'd open the envelope, and that was sort of the big finish at the end. But right after my opening routine, I'd walk into the audience and hand somebody an envelope. And, you know, I've gone through a bunch of different things of, here's an envelope, keep it safe, you know, keep it secret, keep it safe, go ahead and, you know, put it in a safe place, and I'd watch people stick it in their clothes or, you know, whatever. But then I said something like, don't open it yet. You could open it, but if you do now, people may suddenly, you know, stand and applaud and burst into applause. That's for the end of the show. We don't want that just yet. That's a surprise for later. So the idea of, you could open it now, but people may stand and applaud, resulted in, you know, a measurable difference in the number of standing ovations that I got. And that's not just for my ego. That's for the client who paid me, who wants a standing ovation type result. That is for the person in the audience too, who feels like they enjoyed the show better if they stand and applaud. It kind of affects the memory of the whole show as well. So yeah, I was just completely surprised that I didn't change the show. I didn't change the act. I didn't put in new tricks, take out tricks. I just changed how I worded one tiny moment in the show, and then night and day.
I think we'd call that an open loop, right?
So we definitely had, you know, setting the expectation, having an open loop, creating elements of mystery, which as a magician, man, oh man, that is something that I just took for granted, you know. And I see people and how they operate in sort of the real world, and there is none of that. There is no mystery. There is no open loop. And you know, J.J. Abrams talks about this too in his TED talk about the mystery box and opening those loops and bringing people in and maintaining attention. And, you know, we're on a stream right now, and a lot of people are doing these streams for work, and a lot of people are having a hard time grabbing the attention of the attendees, a work meeting or be it something, you know, even more formal than that. And people are checking out, they're shutting their video off and they're just going on their phone or whatever. You know, having that element of mystery, having something that, you know, a loop that, as you said, you know, open up a loop and you know, we call it a pre-call as well sometimes in the world of professional speaking, and, you know, leave those little trails and watch how people respond and react and become even more engaged.
Yeah, I mean, you've got in that one phrase that you're talking about, you've got an open loop, you've got suggestion, you've got future pacing. Like, you've got
you got
a lot of stuff going on there, just in that one little phrase. And when you can open a show or a meeting, as you pointed out, Tim, like with something like that, and you see the best, like, I've been doing copy for a while and coaching and things like that. Even on my coaching calls, I'll do something like that. I had a coaching call earlier today, and, you know, you want to set up the call and set up the expectation that this is going to be amazing and this is going to be cool and it's going to change your life. And like, whenever I have a coaching call, the emails leading up to it are all that kind of language, because it does put them in the right expectation and the right frame of mind, because I think people are overly skeptical.
Yeah.
So we have to use these tools to get them back to even.
Now, same for a sales call. So if anybody does any kind of free consultation, you know, you hear that a free strategy session, free consultation, whatever, right. You know, any entrepreneurs or anybody in that space, when you do those, absolutely set it up in advance. Hey, I'm going to focus this half hour. I'm going to focus this 15 minutes, whatever it is, on you. I'm going to get your questions answered. Absolutely. At the end, if I feel like it's a fit, I may, you know, offer something. And by the way, it's totally fine to say no. We'll part as friends. There's no obligation for this.
Right.
But at the end, I will be. So you let them know in advance. Sometimes I'll even say something like, I'm going to make something available. You know, you know, a lot of people are interested. A lot of people want it. It's, but it's not for everybody, you know, and you kind of just put it out there, let them know. So you're not sideswiping anybody. You're not surprising anybody with this hard sales pitch at the end. You know, you're letting them know. And I've also been on consulting calls where I don't give the pitch. I say ahead of time, hey, I might give a pitch. And at the end I realize this person's not a fit. And I don't give the pitch. And they're like, hey, what about the, what is this thing that you're doing? Tell me about that. I'm like, well, you know, you're not ready or whatever. Yeah, that, and I've, of course, wrapped in some other components and some other elements as well, such as it's perfectly okay to say no, which Robert Cialdini, the author of Persuasion and obviously Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion, sort of the godfather of influence. You know, when I spoke to him and I asked him flat out, you know, what's the number one technique? He said, that's it. Tell people that it's okay to say no.
Yeah.
Almost encourage them to say no. Actively remove the pressure where most people feel like, or most people in sales feel like they have to be applying pressure. The stereotypical salesperson is a high pressure person, but right. That is completely wrong and completely ineffective. It's about actively removing that pressure.
No, I agree. We covered a book called Instant Influence. Mm-hmm. In the last, there's like six or seven steps. I can't remember which it was, but it's how to persuade anybody to do anything in 7 minutes or less. Right. So,
okay. Yeah, this book reminded me of that a whole lot going through that, just going
it's that idea that the next to last step is to give them an out. Like, you know, you don't have to do this. You don't have to change. You don't have to do what I'm asking. And that freeing up allows them to go forward. So, I mean, we do the same thing in coaching. Jonathan, you do it all the time in your sales calls, when you're meeting with people. One of my first copy chiefs, you know, he would use this phrase like at the end of his emails to get people to click through to the sales letters. Mm-hmm. It would be like, if you're interested, click here. So it kind of, some people would say, well, that's kind of weasel words. That's soft. It's not strong enough copy. But it does exactly what you're talking about. It like gives them the option. It lets them feel like they're still in control.
You know, some people tongue in cheek, you know, I had a survey that I transitioned from being a magician to being a professional speaker, you know, I would have this feedback survey, and at the very bottom of the survey, after they had answered all the questions in the survey, there was a checkbox, you know, would you like to receive email notifications? And they would either be able to opt in, or there'd be a second checkbox that said, no, thanks. I'm not interested in improving my human connection abilities. I'm not interested in improving my influence skill. And it was worded in such a way where you're giving them the out, but you're also like, you know, saying almost like, this is a no-brainer. It's kind of ridiculous that you're not doing this.
Yeah.
You know, just take the free stuff.
Yeah.
But it's true, you know, and this is how influence works. It is a series of techniques. It's a science. It's a body of knowledge that fits in with how the human brain is wired, you know, and we're wired to want autonomy and freedom of choice. We don't want to feel like we're being sold to. We love to buy. We hate to feel sold to. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of these, you know, techniques that you read about in influence books. And that's kind of where we start with the four levels of influence, of influencing people, right? Is that first tier of techniques, the things that you do, the things that you say, the ninja hacks, the cool mind, sort of Jedi mind tricks, if you will, the different wordings. You know, there's three more tiers above that, but you know, for now at that place, all of those techniques are designed with the human listener in mind, and the ones that work fit in with the nature of the human brain. And what a fascinating process to sort of reverse engineer that. And, you know, cause the mind or the brain is you start peeling the onion layers back, and it's a wild world right. inside our heads. What's going on there is just so, it's like, it's almost like quantum physics. Like everything is backwards and upside down and crazy. Like you think, you know, people are logical and rational, but man, oh man, does that go out the window when you start looking at what people really do.
Actually do. Yeah. What they actually do.
So you talk about the four levels. What are the, by the way, I love Sean and I were commenting when we first set this interview up. FLIP is an acronym, right? Four levels of influence. What is it? The four levels.
Yeah. What is it? Influencing people. Yeah.
You got influencing it. People. Okay. So talk about, so you just mentioned one, techniques. What are the, what are the other three? Let's kind of summarize those and we'll kind of dig into some of the other three.
Sure. Yeah. I have another acronym that helps people remember this. And the acronym is the word true.
Right.
I think one of the biggest hurdles for a lot of people when they approach the subject of influence is I don't want to be fake.
Yeah.
I don't want to be phony. I don't want to be some snake oil salesperson. I don't want to be some sleazy, fast talking, manipulative jerk, right? I want to be a genuine, authentic person. And truth be told, that is how to be a better influencer, right? Those fake techniques, you know, and there's sort of a balancing act, right? Because many times our authentic self, our knee-jerk reaction, what we might do on a whim, what we might say off the top of our head, while it might be authentic in the moment, it might not also be the best word choice in that moment. So there is sort of a balanced authenticity, I think I call it in the book, this idea that, you know, being authentic to the outcome that you want, being authentic to, you know, sort of the desire that you have, your intention that you have, and then using techniques that may not feel natural, that may not feel normal for you, but that's, isn't that the definition of how you grow and how you develop and how you learn a new skill? Yeah. Is you do, yeah. it can't just be, I mean, this is a learned skill. It's not something that's just automatic and easy for a lot of people.
Right. Yeah, I think
certainly. You know, it's not natural for me.
Yeah, there's a quote that I was thinking of while you were saying that about the difference between that authentic, like being authentic in what you want, and the quote about human nature. So like our most authentic self, human nature is to relieve yourself in your pants, right? I mean, like when we're born, like that's human nature. Like we don't want to be that authentic.
Here we go. Here it is. Here's what I say in the book. Be as calculating as you are genuine. So, like you know, have the authenticity of the intent, but also think about what you're doing and what you're saying. Yeah. And,
was that Sun Tzu that said that? Is that who said that?
Oh gosh, he might have said it before me. I don't know. But you know, so the other levels of influence, and I'll just kind of rattle through them.
Okay.
Or maybe I'll leave one of them a mystery box. I don't know. Yeah, let's see. Maybe I'll leave an open loop going sure. here. So the second level of the acronym TRUE, right? So T stands for technique. Mm-hmm. R stands for relationship, and I think people get this on an intuitive level, right? Mm-hmm. The idea of no, like, and trust, right? Yep. All things being equal, people do business with who they know, who they like, and who they trust. People listen to who they know, who they like, and who they trust. All things not being equal, people do business with who they know, who they like, and who they trust. So, this, you know, this is the story I give is, mom, your mother is going to buy, you know, the school fundraiser stuff from you, even though she can get the same thing cheaper at Walmart. You know, it's not the best price. It's not, you know, but she even has to wait for it to come in the mail. But she's going to place that order for you because of the relationship that exists. Yeah. Oprah right. can go on TV, and because of the relationship that she's established, the rapport that she's established with her viewing audience. She hasn't met any of them, you know, per se, but she has a relationship with those people. She recommends a book. It goes to the number one in the New York Times. You know, she just has that relationship ability. She could give the world's worst pitch. Mm-hmm. She could get up there and fumble through her words and mess everything up, but still have that ability to create influence. So those types of moments, and for me, it happened. I've never told this story before. It's not in the book. It's really nowhere. It's kind of embarrassing. Hey, you know, 11%.
Yeah, so, there you go.
That's why we get our guests to drink beer. So they just kind of tell us stuff that they wouldn't normally do.
So I was at a, this was 2009. I was at a marketing conference and I was one of the presenters and it was for magicians who are interested in marketing. This is a very, very tiny group of people. So I get up there and I had this perfect script just mapped out. And, you know, so I go through and I deliver this presentation. I have this pitch. I do the whole thing perfectly. And like nothing, I got nothing from it. And I saw somebody else bumble their way through their presentation and then get flooded in the back of the room to sell their product. And I realized that what I had done wrong, or the element that was missing, was any kind of rapport, any kind of relationship, any kind of, you know, likability in that moment, because it was memorized and robotic. There was no, again, sort of connection, you know, with the audience. So I kind of threw away everything that I had learned as an entertainer and failed to do that. Now, I talked about the human brain and how we're wired. And one of the most fundamental, one of the most important lessons that we can learn about influence is the idea that, you know, there is someone that you're influencing. There's another person, and that person is evaluating you, is judging you based on these two different frequencies, right? They've got the first frequency of, does this guy know what he's talking about? Does this person know what is going, do I believe this person? Do I trust this person? Right. And the second channel that we evaluate people on is, do I like this person? Yeah. You know, it is the liked and respected sort of, the sort of polar opposites. And sometimes people think those are mutually exclusive. I can either like you or I could respect you, but anything you do as an influencer to build the likability tends to feel like it undermines the other one, right?
The respect, knowledge, and the expertise, and
yeah, anything you do that's likable, you know. Oh, you know, you can, yeah, sure, you can go. Well, I like you, but I don't respect you, right. And then the opposite is anything you do to sort of earn respect and be that hard nosed, you know, tough, fast talking, whatever, then you lose the likability piece. So yeah, there is a delicate sort of balancing act, if you will, and that's where this book came from, right? This book came from, you know, after having published Magic Words, after really, I mean, that book has so many citations and references and scientific sort of, it was a nightmare, you know, yeah, putting everything together and referencing everything and just accumulating all of that data, right? It was just a very data-driven book. And the follow-up, you know, the flip here is more about like, well, how is that stuff actually, how is it applied? What are the stories? And what's the next level, right? Because Magic Words just covers technique. Change your words, change this, change that. But the four levels of influencing people really does expand beyond that. And relationship is that second tier, that thing that trumps technique. It is more important than technique. You get the relationship right, you can afford to make mistakes with technique. You don't want to, but you can afford to make mistakes with technique. If you're only operating with technique, you got to be perfect, and that's still not going to be enough. So those are the first two tiers.
These aren't just like four categories. These are levels on top of each other as far as importance. Is that how you would put these in order?
Yeah, they build, you know, and if you continue to mess up technique, you're going to start to undermine relationship. If you continue to blow it with the, you know, you say, you're not saying what you mean. You're not really getting the techniques right. You're not getting the words right. The communication is breaking down. Well, the relationship's going to break down over time, right, as well.
Sure.
So they do build on each other. But again, also, once again, you know, relationship is more important than technique.
All right.
I was going to say, yeah, I guess it's in the relationship, the section on relationships where you talk about confidence. I found that really interesting because you've got the kind of the diagram on people that are confident. You know, people are attracted naturally. I think confidence is a very persuasive characteristic. A person that's confident, they naturally have that charisma. People are gravitated towards them. But there's a level that you can get beyond that. And that's, you talk about deference, having mm-hmm. deference along with confidence in that relationship. And if you skew too far to just being overconfident, I think people start to look at you as kind of a
cocky.
A jerk, you know? And I think that, you know, there's some qualities that a lot of people are attracted to Trump because he's very confident. He's a confident person and individual. But then I think one of the things that he lacks in that personality is that deference, you know? And so he goes like to the far side, you know, being so overconfident that it feels cocky.
And it's so on the line between the two, I think, that depending on which side you're on, you're going to see it the way you want to see it.
Right.
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 But, you know, and those New York, those Northeasterners, man, they're just.
That's right. That's right. They just say what they mean. They say what they say, right? There's some authenticity there.
That is true. That is true. We do tend to speak our mind. So, you know, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned, you know, talking about the, I don't know how well this is showing up here, but these diagrams. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the things that drives me so crazy is the myth that people buy into. Because, you know, I mentioned earlier, people are judging you on these channels. Are you competent? Are you likable?
Sure.
And one of the biggest giveaways that you're not competent is if you don't think you're competent, if you don't have that confidence, if you don't have that belief in what you're telling me, how am I supposed to believe it when you don't believe it yourself? Right. I'll smell that on you, right? Anybody will smell that on you. Yeah. So this idea of overconfidence, it blows my mind. Like, there's no such thing as overconfidence. That's not the issue.
Right.
You cannot be too confident. Right. Would we look at Martin Luther King Jr. and say, you know what, you're just too confident? Was he off the charts confident? From the outside perspective, it seems that way. Absolutely. He had this presence, right? Mm-hmm. So it is not, you're either a doormat. And then, you know, you go to confidence, and then if you keep going though, hang on, that's overconfident. No, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Confidence is its own scale. If you are perceived as overconfident, that's because you're high on another scale. That other scale is called arrogance. Yeah. And that is where, you know, we sort of run into this 2x2 here.
Yep.
And people love 2x2s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'll just kind of let that sink in here for a moment. You know, we've got confidence. And then no confidence down here. But then you've got the arrogance scale and the deference scale. And that creates different outcomes, right? So over up here, too confident means you're high on confidence, but also high on arrogance. Right. That's your overconfidence. Opposite that is doormat. But yeah, right around the upper right, as every 2x2, you want to end up in the upper right.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
You know, high confidence, but also high deference. Yeah. You know,
I was just gonna say, I just want to reiterate the point like that, I've never really made that connection that the confidence, it's not a linear thing where you move through confidence into arrogance or cocky. Like, that's a good distinction that those are two different things.
Yeah.
And that you can't be overconfident, really. Like, it's just, you're really confident. That's it. Like, you don't become overconfident.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and really confident people, you know, this is another paradox about confidence, because people, if they want to portray confidence, right, what do they do? They try to portray this image of strength,
right.
But real, true, genuine confidence is portrayed as vulnerability.
Sure.
People who are genuinely confident can be self-deprecating. They can, you know, laugh at themselves. They can, you know, kind of go with the flow. Yeah. So, you know, even with body language, you know, which is our fundamental first language, any confident stance, any confident position of your body is also highly vulnerable to attack from any predators, right? So if I'm standing like this, right, and I'm across the way from a bear, I'm not going to expose all my vital organs like this. Right? I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm going to turn tail, I'm going to run, or I'm going to freeze first, right? You know, I'm going to have that fight or flight response and, you know, push down the person next to me and run away or whatever. But the idea, though, again, is that vulnerability equals confidence.
Yeah.
Hmm. Vulnerability equals confidence in any language that we speak.
Yeah, that's a great visual, you know, for people, that the more confident you are, the more vulnerable you are. If you just think about how people stand in body language, that's a great, great point. All right. So we're running low. We got to get you to your date. So we've got two things left. We're going to keep one of them a secret so people buy the book.
Ooh, but it's so my favorite.
You get dealer's choice.
I'll skip the third one then.
Okay, you're going to skip you. And you're going
to
go to
E. I'll go to E.
All right. I'll go to E.
So, yeah, E stands for ethics. Now, this is another, I don't want to say a surprise when I was writing the book and doing the research, but it was maybe a pleasant surprise, I guess you could say it that way. So, you know, I've always looked at, you know, my own process of creating influence, mm-hmm. as, you know, starting with from a place of just ethics, right? Mm-hmm. Am I manipulating people? And I'm sure you probably get this question a lot. You know, with a title like Persuasion by the Pint, people probably ask you all the time, well, like, what, how is that a nice guy thing? Like, how is that, you know, you guys are nice guys. How does that fit in with what you know, that seems like a very, you know, anti nice guy thing to do, is to tell people what they have to do and push them to do it. That's manipulative,
right?
Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile that? So that question comes up always from everywhere, from every angle. And I had that question myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how, you know, far you guys have gotten in the book, but that's the very, very end. And we, you know, that was one of the, you know, most interesting sections of the book to write and to dive into and to research, because I kept waiting for it to be like, yeah, you know, it's nice to say that. It's nice to say that. But at the end of the day, it's the law of the jungle. And the person who really is manipulative really does, you know, win the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just, but that never happened. It never happened that, you know, other than the short term, right? Other than the short term, yes, you can get a sale. Yes, you can do this. Yes, you can do that. Yes, you can get a date. Yes, you can get another date, you know, with those manipulative techniques. But the beauty, again, of how human beings operate and how we've adjusted as a species is that, you know, we squash those things that are unethical. And ethical simply, you know, it is a gray area. A lot of people say, well, this is my set of ethics and this is my set of ethics. The one that I operate under is, you know, I was taking this class of how to write fiction, because I've always written nonfiction. I'm like, well, maybe I'll write something that I just make up off the top of my head instead of like having to do all this research, like years of research ahead of time. So, you know, I took this course and the guy said this, all right, you've got a good guy and you've got a bad guy. You've got a hero. You've got a villain.
Yep.
The only difference between the two, the only thing that makes a good guy and a bad guy is this. The good guy is selfless. The bad guy is selfish. That's it. Whatever you want to do within any other, like everything else is creative license. But if you make the bad guy selfless, it's a bad book. You've messed it up. If you make the good guy selfish, you've messed it up. Good guy is selfless. They sacrifice themselves. Bad guy is selfish.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at that and saying, well, of course, a selfish person is going to grab more of the pie and, you know, maybe they'll win at the end of the day. But I was, again, very pleasantly surprised to see that the crowd, right? The crowd corrects that. It is a crowd corrected thing. Yeah. And we live in a time and in a point in history when the crowd has incredible influence and we are incredibly connected to the crowd at large. It's no longer, well, there's this crowd and there's this crowd and there's this crowd. Yes, that's still happening, but there's also like the crowd that we're all connected and information is traveling even faster than it ever has. So, you know, the idea of being a manipulative, persuasive jerk is absolutely shooting yourself in the foot.
Sure.
And it is also proven by a really cool thought experiment that they explain, or that I explain, I should say, in the book as well.
All right. We'll have to get the people to pick up the book for that. So the title of the book is The Four Levels of Influencing People. And Flip is on the cover. So if you're searching for it on Amazon, we had a hard time finding it. Just if you write Flip, it doesn't come up very well on Amazon, just so you know, Tim. So type put Tim David.
Yeah.
I always type in Flip Tim David. Yeah.
David. If you do Flip Tim David, it'll come up right away. But if you just type Flip it, it probably won't. You have to dig for it.
Which is funny too, you know, because I do jiu-jitsu as a hobby, if you will. Ah. And there's a lot of people out there who do Flip Tim David. I'm not very good.
I will say you've got a section on there on the elevator pitch. It's probably worth the price of getting the book by itself. Oh, wow. 'Cause it's like, and the reason I say that, I'm not going to give it away. I'm going to let people read it. But we've been talking the last few episodes on pattern disruption. It's a classic, you know, going through the, your interpretation or the way you define the elevator pitch is all about pattern interruption. You know, what is, you know, most people think of elevator pitch and they think, okay, I gotta find out a really creative way to give my spiel. But looking at that self-deprecation, like you talk about, it's a great way to kind of break the pattern. So that's all I'm going to say, because I want to leave people I want to leave them with a little curiosity. You know,
it's funny too, you know, because that has become, you know, that has been published in the Harvard Business Review, and it is hugely circulated recently on LinkedIn. I keep, every time I sign into LinkedIn lately, it's regarding that. Yeah. I'm getting all these notifications. People have been sharing that. People have been circulating
that. That's great.
And so I appreciate the, you know, the sort of affirmation there. It's making the rounds for sure. And finally, you know, the way that people approach elevator pitches is,
That's good.
Is appalling in some cases. So,
So one really last question. Yep. One last question.
Sure, sure.
For those of you that aren't on video, we're on video with Tim here. And so your name is Tim David. Last I checked, that's a T and a D. And there's an S behind you. Is that for the speaks? Tim David Speaks, like on your green screen, other side.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, yeah. So, this is it's funny, you know, sometimes you're forced into things. Sometimes the circumstances of life just sort of push you into things. So, this is my logo for a business called GetSpeakingGigs.com.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
So very cool.
The dollar sign with a microphone.
It looked like Michigan State Sparty, the Sparty S. I was about to throw up. So when I first saw that, when you came on, but then I realized, you know, it had nothing to do with Michigan State.
Yeah, and then you threw up with the Red Sox and Cubs, yeah.
That's right.
Man, I'll tell you what.
So, Tim, it's been fun, man. We don't want to get in trouble with the wife. We're going to let you out of here, but I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming on and sharing about your book. We'll be sure to, I'll send you the link once we get this published, and love to have you back on again. Talk about your other. I love the magic words. That sounds pretty interesting.
A lot of fun. Yeah, absolutely. Would love to.
All right.
Name the date.
All right. You bet. Have a good one. All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks, John.
You bet. All right. Very cool. All right.
Yeah, man, there's a lot there we could unpack for sure, but, we might have to do a follow-up episode with him, like you said, with the magic words, and maybe get back into some of this. But yeah, just going through the names of the titles of the chapters here, people definitely want to, I mean, if you just go to Amazon and look up the book and look at the table of contents, you'll know pretty quick if this is the kind of book that you want to read. So
I tell you, there's one other outside of the one that I mentioned. There's a one other where he interviews Cialdini. That's really interesting as well. I didn't get a chance to ask him that, but you want to get the book for that reason alone. There's a chapter on there about making them an offer they can refuse. Very interesting. So
yeah, very interesting. I like that. We need to mention our beer of the month club people.
Yes, yes. Our sponsor is Craft Beer Club. And wouldn't you know it, I didn't have my my notes pulled.
Didn't have the logo ready. Oh, man.
So give me a second, Sean. Say
the
something.
The work of experts here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is how you run a highly successful podcast.
All right. So Craft Beer Club, you can find them by going to persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer. For all of you beer connoisseurs, if you're big on craft beers and you like variety, then you want to check it out, because they pick from some of the best craft breweries around the country. They put together a monthly membership. You can make it a bi-monthly, however you want it. And these are great gifts too, by the way, because I give them away as gift cards. So you don't have to make it an ongoing thing.
Isn't it like 12 beers for $43 or something like that? Yep. That's about what it is, something like that. So that's about right. You know, two to three, we're going to have to up to, we'll have about a beer and a half an episode if we, you know, by doing that. So
It's perfect. If you're in a state where it's like lockdown, you know, we should have been, these guys should have been our sponsors back during when we were really locked down. This would be ideal because, you know, you just have them sent to you every month, you know, but if you want to learn more, go to persuasionbythepint.com/craft beer to learn more about our sponsor, Craft Beer Club. And with that said, it's been fun, Sean. as always. We've got another episode to do on, and we'll be, our next episode, we'll be covering some dark persuasion.
Dark persuasion. We've got some
framing, all that good stuff.
We got all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's a flight of persuasion on the next episode.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll have a randomness, a little randomness to the show, but it's always, those are some of my favorite shows, to be honest. Like, those are usually some cool stuff comes out, and let's face it, that's kind of how the show started, was us exactly just talking about random stuff that happened during the week. So I've got a couple like packaging things for people to see. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to show my package. I'm going to show other packages that I found that were delivered to me in the mail.
Yeah.
So to awesome. Be clear.
Awesome. Can't wait. Well, we'll see you on the other side. Thanks for listening. As always, you can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platforms. And if you have questions, send it to us. Reach out to us through our contact page. Sean, it's been fun. We'll see you on the next one.
All right. See you.